Greetings, podcast listeners. This is your host, Robert. Happy to be here now in this moment with you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me on an adventure of the mind, or the quiet mind, or the unquiet mind, some kind of mind. Thank you very much to all the patrons that have contributed that help the podcast flourish. What I'm talking about today is something, of course, I've mentioned before, as I sit and practice every day. This is the one thing that without it, life would be much more difficult for me personally. And that is what they call, or what we can refer to as, the ground of being. What is the ground of being? Good question. The other words that you could use for this would be foundation or stability, inner calm, imperturbability. It's a primordial purity, and it's a spontaneous presence. So what does all that mean? I'm going through my notes here. When we look at the older Zen stuff that is practiced throughout China and Tibet, and probably all over the world, they would refer to this as a primordial state, the true absolute nature, the perfect present, what we would call in Zen, the suchness. This is a place that we can arrive at in our practice when we have been sitting a real long time. With me, I was looking at, I have the date on the back of my rakusu. That is, it's the little bib that we wear when we practice Zazen. And I looked on the back of it, and my teacher had dated it, I believe, July 2010. Been practicing Zazen a while now. Does that mean that I'm any good at it? Have I reached a level of mastery? And I would say, absolutely no. That's what I would say. Who am I to be talking about this? I'm just a guy sitting in a little shed in Sedona, Arizona, entangled with unanswerable questions, constantly reading and studying, and then sitting silently, ignoring revelations in my mind, trying to ignore any deep spiritual experience. And when reaching a certain state of what might be referred to as peace or calm or the suchness, tossing that out and saying, not that, not that. But I do have a little experience with what we might call this concept, the ground of being. And I'm just speaking from my own experience. This is my own testimony to that which cannot be spoken of, Zen. So I guess then if the rule is not to talk about Zen, the ultimate Zen thing would be to talk about Zen. Not this, not this. We talk about, or we ponder the concept of ground of being. Obviously, if I go outside and I walk on the ground here in Sedona, the red rocks, I am on the ground, literally. Sure, there may be lots of stuff underneath me going down to the center of the planet, but this is the ground to me. And you get a good path, it's pretty stable, it's level, and you can count on that ground not falling out from under your feet. We talk a lot about grounding in meditation. We talk a lot about grounding in a spiritual sense, a metaphysical sense. Some people take off their shoes and walk in the grass, and they say this grounds them. There's some kind of magnetic force, like the vortex sites that we have here in Sedona. Something is pulling them down into the earth. It's pulling away toxicities. It's giving them that sense of stability and oneness with the planet. That's all well and good, but this, what I'm talking about, it's a little bit more conceptual, and I would say it is very mental. It's a brain thing. My experience goes something like this. Struggling with many different forms of meditation over several years, as I would sit in the longer practice periods, and even before that, when I was sitting on my own, I would experience this place that was, I don't know, nice. And that place would be where, you know, finally my octopus head, you know, the monkey mind, would quiet down, it would settle. And of course, that's done with, you know, whatever method works for you. With me, it's about breathing and becoming aware and conscious of my breath. So I'm conscious of my breath and I'm sitting. And who knows, I don't know how many hours that it took to finally reach this place. I can remember earlier practices in my life where I would reach this place of divine union, where I would feel this tremendous love from the divine energy, you know, the source energy. I would just bathe in that and then come out of it, stub my toe and yell out some expletive and lose my temper with the dogs barking. As I started to dig a little bit deeper, I questioned this methodology of, wow, I sit here forever, I have this divine union, it's very contrived. There must be some other way to do this. And as you know, as one of my listeners, if you've listened to me before, sitting with the Zen people was quite interesting. My introduction to it was I knew nothing, and I just sat with them and stared at a wall for hours. No instruction, nobody really telling me what to do, which was very interesting. They probably thought I knew what I was doing, and I was probably too silly to actually ask a question of anyone. So I went along for the ride, and after many hours of doing this and doing it for years, there would be this place that I would reach of what I would call absolute, complete stillness, but totally present, totally aware, cognizant, but at a level where the mind was no longer attaching or labeling anything at all that it was seeing, smelling, feeling, hearing. And upon reaching this place, I understood how ordinary was extraordinary. That's the best way to put it. Ordinary was extraordinary. After many, many years of that, ordinary becoming extraordinary went back to ordinary. So, what am I mumbling about? What's this all about? Well, to me, that journey through the seeking of powerful spiritual experiences to somehow justify or validate the fact that there was something beyond my thinking mind and some source, some power, some higher power, whatever you want to call it, wanting to meet the big guy on the cloud, however you want to say, and then eventually having, and I would call them experiences of the divine, which manifested within this person as a feeling of unconditional love. And that feeling felt like it was outside of me. And then I sit, I let go of all that. And I see, no, wait a minute. That seems like it's not only outside, but inside. Is this all just coming from my head? Is all of this in my mind? And to get stuck there in, oh, it's all my mind. It's all in my mind. There's no one to save. There's nobody here. There's nobody home. There's nothing to do. And then coming full circle through looking into the shadow work and the dark side of everything and reliving horrible moments from my past and bringing that all up into this present. And mentioning in the last couple of podcasts that without that so-called ground of being, which is extremely difficult to explain in words, without that ground of being, I wouldn't have been able to stop the spiritual bypassing and actually look at and feel and experience pain and suffering from my past, to relive these traumas, to work through them, to acknowledge them. What I'm saying is this is definitely an important part of the journey. And what I'm trying to point to is that we've all had a hard time, I think. Some of us have had difficulties I could not imagine. And it's not really about whose trauma is more intense. It's more about we have all experienced trauma. And there may be a path that you're taking that's not allowing you to be able to face that, to look at the darker side of yourself and the darker side of everything. And like I said, the caveat emptor here is not, you can't do that until you're ready. You can't force yourself to relive those painful moments until you're ready. And as I've always said many times, the caution that I want to put out there to you is always, always, always think about reaching out if you're diving into these things that are dark. Don't feel like you should go this alone. And I have an email. It's aquietmind@gmail.com. Send me an email if you need somebody to listen, share what you're feeling. Those that have gone there before, that have walked that path, that have found their ground of being, that are now able to return to the real world, there is a burning desire, you could say, to want to help other people. And I guess that's what this podcast is about. I don't know if I guess, but that really is what gets me to come back to it, because it's not easy for me to do these. And it can be quite challenging. And then I start to think, well, maybe it's helping. Maybe I can help. Like I said, though I'm no expert, I've been through some things in my life, and I've done a tremendous amount of work in meditation and study to be able to be okay in the world. Just, and granted, I may be different. My mind might be different. The struggle I have there might be because of a hypersensitivity or hyper awareness, hyper alertness, whatever the hyper is. Yeah, just being a little too sensitive, taking things too personally, overthinking, thinking, starting things, stopping things. That would be me. And at the same time, looking toward beauty as a ground of being as well. Being out in nature for me is a ground of being. But this ground of being that I'm talking about is this place that you can reach within your practice where there are times where you're no longer struggling with your mind. You're not trying to quiet your mind anymore. You're not asking any questions. You're not struggling with your body. You are not caught in a place where you think it's all an illusion and it's not real. You're not caught in a place where you think there's nobody and nothing and no one to save, in kind of a Zen sickness or a void. You are just sitting there, and it's just life. It's just this. It's just what's happening. And that thing that's happening is very amazing. The last podcast I did was my little ode to how beautiful everything is and how we should be curious and we should be aware of the gifts that are around us here. Ah, but how can I be aware of all that when I have so much trouble going on in my life and my mind is so busy and I go for a walk and all I hear is a bunch of noise in my head? Well, I say, this ground of being, as I said in my notes, let's see here. It's primordial purity, a spontaneous presence. So it's just there. And let's see, what are my other notes here? This is the true absolute nature. It is perfect and it is present. And I've mentioned it many times as saying that what we would call the Buddha nature is inherent within all of us. Everything is alive. Everything is awake. What's the point? The point is to have that direct experience for yourself of this primordial state. You could call it, at one point, emptiness, but it's emptiness that is full. The emptiness allows for there to be the space for things to be, like stars and planets, pill bugs, you and me, Topo Chico. The emptiness allows for all things to be. And one of the things that I find helps me in this alignment is to understand that primordial state is not a state of resting. It's not like we're going to rest here and that's it. That's the answer. And we have found it. We are enlightened. We're in nirvana. There's no more work to do. I'm just going to sit here in this state. Like I always said, you make a nest, you see you've made that nest, you kick yourself out of it. Kick yourself out of it. Because we can get caught up, and I'm speaking from my own experience here, we get too caught up in believing that we have reached this goal of nirvana or awakening or enlightenment and this space of nothing and no one. And we're just abiding in that space, the zero space of nothing happening to anyone. And eventually what happens is through the arising of and noticing that there is some sort of draw, there's a compassion there for all beings. All beings are awake on a path to not reconnecting, but seeing that this primordial state, this absolute nature, the perfect present, is a part of their consciousness. This is not absent from you. It's not something you need to find or add to yourself. It's just rediscovering it. Again, the no Zen thing. It's not, wow, meditation is going to make your life better and you're going to be more productive at work and you'll have better relationships. I'll leave that for other people. What I say is, wow, be prepared to have everything blown up in your face through meditation. And know that this ground of being is there holding everything. And I have seen it, like I said, as space itself, where everything, including us, is flying around in it. To me, that seems like it. That's kind of the absolute, the primordial state. And to me, once again, probably all in my head, it seems like it's intelligent. This is the place where you can go and kind of put down your walking stick by the fire and just sit down and say, okay, let me look at this a little bit deeper. Let me go into this a little bit more. This place where it feels like everything's happening. Everything is fine. I'm fine. My mind has stopped. And I'm just here observing all things as they arise and fall. And in acceptance of that, not trying to change anything, not asking any questions, just sitting in this place of absolute, total, not really surrender so much as observing just this consciousness, this awareness, this part of my being, part of my mind that isn't tearing everything apart. It isn't trying to take the watch apart to tell what time it is. It's just observing the natural flow of all things. And we're a part of that natural flow of all things. And then the experience of, the knowledge of, or the awakening of, how everything is is dependent on one another, how everything is moving just as it should be. And that is a very interesting place. There is one that is observing the one that is silently observing all things as they are. Those two aspects are just thought forms. It's all just thought forms. The weird wall that we have, or the walls that we have, where we think we are separate from the divine, where the magical, the mystical things, we're somehow separate from all of these things, always, always clawing our way to happiness, always trying to add things to an already overfilled cup. And the removal of these things doesn't even have to be a physical removal. It can be a mental process where we are learning to let go of attachment to things. And these things too, for me, were clever thoughts. Letting go of my attachment to my clever thinking. And diving deeper into my own mind and finding that place where everything stops, but everything keeps going. And what am I but a witness to all things arising and falling as they should, in perfect harmony and balance? Oh, and what a relief. You set down the walking stick. You're done being the spiritual pilgrim for now, at this moment. Many awakenings to come, many enlightenments to come. But you've reached this plateau where you have seen something that makes you feel a little bit better about life. And in life, when we're taking that practice period and we're saying, okay, I've got my incense, I have my candle, I'm wearing my rakusu, I have my meditation cushions, I have my bell, I ring my bell, I get all set up, I got my timer going for 40 minutes, and here I sit, and I don't move, and I'm practicing not thinking. And things happen, and thoughts come, and they go, and sometimes there's an attachment to a particular thought, then a realization, oh, I'm attached to that thought. Okay. Don't really do anything at that point. Just realize there was an attachment before you know it. That thought will go down in volume till it's gone. Now maybe another thought comes up right away. But this is the funny game of Zen ping pong. We sit there. And a kind of an interesting thing happens after a while. You start to focus more on how you're sitting and how you're holding yourself rather than your thoughts. And you also may be focusing on breath, or just the feeling of the breath around your face, your nose as it comes in and out. Many different ways to be able to focus your attention away from the thinking. Because really, that's all you're doing. Attention, attention, attention. Okay, here comes a thought. Well, oh, wait a minute, I'm meditating. Well, okay, I'm going to bring my attention back to my breath, back to the breath. It's as simple as that. Simple, he says. Doing this over and over again, eventually, you may reach a point, like I said, where you're more focused on getting your posture and focusing and moving very slowly when you're making the changes in how you're sitting, getting your spine very erect, you know, straightening up your neck and bringing your chin in toward your chest, shoulders relaxed and down, your front, your belly soft, and your spine nice and straight. And you're looking for that mountain seat that we've talked about before, this solid foundation, this tripod that you're making. And you start to focus on that. And what happens is very interesting. You'll forget about that. That gets dialed in, and then you forget about it. You forget about your posture. If you're leaning forward, you might get a little jolt, like you're going to fall asleep. You're bringing your attention back to the held mudra and where you're holding that. And everybody does a lot of different things. One of the things that I do is I will actually visualize a breath coming in. And this is in the beginning of the meditation when I come in and my mind is still very active with thoughts and thinking. So I will bring my attention down into my stomach and I will feel or see or visualize that in-breath as I'm saying in, the in-breath coming in from that lower part of my belly. I'll feel that there, I'll see it, I'll visualize it. And then as I exhale, I focus right underneath my nose. I put all my attention on feeling that breath come out when I say out. So there's the inflow coming in that lower part of the belly, and letting that breath be natural. It's not, you don't have to exert strain or fill your lungs too much or get tight or tense with the breathing. It's just natural. You're letting it come in and you're letting it go out, focusing that attention underneath your nose. You should try this. It's really quite amazing. I'm sure I'm breaking some rules there. But that's how I found that, just sitting with no instruction during a long practice period. I started to imagine my breath in that way. It gave me this visualization. It gave me the concentration of the sound that I was making in my mind of in and out during that whole breathing cycle. Doesn't allow much for the mind to start thinking or attaching to thoughts. It counteracts that a little bit. It's like tricking the mind. And after a while, when you practice this, once you get to a certain place and your mind is calmed down quite a bit and it's focused, you've worked out all the stuff with your posture and where you're sitting, you'll reach this place where you're no longer thinking about the breath. You're no longer having a barrage of thoughts. There might be a few that come in here and there. You're not focused on the breath. You're not focused on the posture, and you're not focused on your thoughts. You're going into a place where mind and body have relaxed a little bit. So, what's the point in all that? Well, the interesting thing is, if you find yourself in situations like I do often. We've talked about this lots of times, but it's still viable. It's still something I need to bring up because it's something I do many times throughout the day. No matter what I'm working on, if I find that I'm not focused on the task at hand, I'm going to bring my attention back to it, just like I would when I'm sitting. And my thoughts start to get fragmented or discursive or whatever, or I'm wool gathering or remembering things from my childhood or whatever. I'm going to bring my attention back to my breathing. And when I'm seated in my meditation, I'm doing the same thing when I'm putting the mail through the shredder, the junk mail. If I see, oh, I'm thinking about something that doesn't have anything to do with what I'm doing. Oh, I'll bring my attention. Okay, I'm putting this thing in the shredder. And, you know, the next jump is that there's no I there. But we don't want to go too far into that. You know, that can be for other people. I did the no I thing for quite a while. I'm back to the hello, Robert. Yeah. Yeah, I got to do the thing. Got to do the thing called life. Got to show up. Got to work, got to pay the bills, you know, can't float around in the Buddha field. Anyway, that's another story. So my point is that there is a progression without there being a goal. The progression is that beautiful soft place that you arrive at in your practice when you're on the cushion will actually start to happen when you're in real life. You'll be shocked, but try to remember it. and give yourself the props, give yourself the acknowledgement and the validation. Hey, this time I caught myself. Wow. Somebody was rude to me, and I didn't go right into a mode either of verbal defense or, doing the fawning where you just, you know, you compartmentalize everything and hold everything in, or the barrage of negative thoughts or even violent thoughts. Wow, I caught myself. It's like I was meditating standing up. That's it. But then one loses the enlightenment idea. One loses the nirvana. One loses the immersion in bliss. One lets go of abiding and non-dual awareness. When you see the suchness, and the suchness is more extraordinary than the supposed spiritual awakening, the suchness being the ground of being, that which is this primordial state, the absolute true nature, the perfect present moment, that includes everything. That becomes, the ordinary becomes much more interesting than the so-called spiritual experience of enlightenment or oneness with the universe. This becomes your home here with all the people, becomes more interesting than that. So thank you so much for listening. And like I said before, you need somebody to talk to, shoot me an email. I have much better internet service now. So I can actually start doing things again on Zoom. So stay tuned for that. And remember, the ordinary is extraordinary. See you next time.